You know, it was 20 years ago that Rwanda experienced 100 terrible days of genocide, fighting between the Hutus and Tutsis, which finally ended and then, of course, had to be prosecuted. With us today is Denver attorney and University of Denver law lecturer David Akerson, who has a specialty in international law and crimes of war. You began, or you were chosen, to aid in the prosecution of this. How did that happen? How did you become involved?
Good morning, Cynthia. Thanks for having me. It's kind of an indirect route to the tribunal, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. But the short version is that my first job out of law school, I worked for a group fighting apartheid in South Africa called Southern African Lawyers for Human Rights. And that became part of a lifelong love affair with Africa and living abroad. And when the Rwanda genocide happened and the United Nations created the first international criminal tribunal since Nuremberg, Yugoslavia and Rwanda happened about the same period of time. But this was the first African tribunal. It was just something that was compelling to me and something that I was able to luckily convince my wife that would be worthwhile. And so she agreed to... I just applied online and I got a job at the UN
website.
That's
remarkable.
And then the hard part was convincing my wife to bring a 4 and a 2-year-old to Central Africa. This was about 3 years after the genocide. And Rwanda was somewhat stabilized by that period of time, but it was still a leap of faith for my wife to join
you on this big adventure. So you were hired as the chief of information and evidence, and you confronted this hotel room just stacked to the gills with evidence. Is that right?
Right. So when I arrived, the UN had been living in Rwanda, and their investigations had been headquartered in an old hotel called the Amahoro Hotel. And investigators had been on the on site for a couple of years, and they had been going out into the field and identifying evidence. So physical evidence, tangible evidence, witness statements, witnesses, photographs, that kind of thing. And they hadn't really thought about what to do with it once they had collected it. So a lot of it had accumulated just in a spare office, which happened to be an old hotel room. And for some reason, a lot of the evidence just ended up in a bathtub in the bathroom of this hotel room. It was appalling conditions. And they knew, the United Nations knew that they needed to do something.
This was a major series of brutal crimes, and you were confronting some pretty terrible evidence. Did that take you aback?
It took everyone aback. It was a daily fact of life at the tribunal that you're confronting some of the most brutal crimes ever committed, and on a scale that was really unprecedented. There were 800,000 people that were killed in 100 days, most of whom were killed by machete or in similar kinds of brutal ways. So it was unlike the German genocide that was done in a very mechanized and behind walls and pretty private. Rwanda was done in a very open and notorious way in the streets. And the rate of killing in Rwanda was 6 times the rate of the German genocide, to give you an idea of that. So, it was for everybody involved, and there were a lot of people involved in the tribunal, investigators, lawyers, administrators, security personnel. That was a particularly hard aspect of the job. But the real challenge was trying to connect the political and the military leaders to those crimes that were committed by usually 18 to 24-year-old young men who had been inflamed and enraged over time.
And you have spent time, you've gone back several times since then, I believe. How does Rwanda seem today?
I think Rwanda is one of the miracles of our times. There's a renaissance going on in Rwanda. It's not without controversy, but Rwanda, when you go there now, I think apart from South Africa, they have experienced more growth, more development. Two of the remarkable things going on in Rwanda, one is that they have really reduced corruption in a way that is remarkable for any other sub-Saharan African country. And so you're just amazed when you go there 20 years after the genocide that there's real development going on. There's the money, the aid that has been flowing into Africa, which has been substantial. It's a lot of guilt money that's gone to Rwanda. But it's being used and delivered to the people of Rwanda. So they, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's okay. Go ahead. Finish.
So, you know, the two things that amaze me are the aid money that is allocated for Rwanda is actually being used for aid and is and is producing real development. Yeah. So, and they have been serious about planning their future. So they have a very thoughtful government that is, it seems to be anyways, really interested in delivering goods and services to the population.
How about the people? We're talking only 20 years here, so they're the survivors. There are people on both sides. How's that healing process gone? Is there anything being actually done for that, so that you don't have these you don't have these divisions, emotional scars, always going to be there. But in terms of how people interact with one another, how's that going?
You know, it's hard, I think, for an outsider to really know what's happening below the surface.
Mm-hmm.
At least on the surface, it seems to be going really well. They have an official policy that they are trying to reduce the presence of ethnicity. So at the time of the genocide, people were clearly noted on their licenses and identity cards as either Tutsi or Hutu. That no longer is a designation. So the government is trying to make it a unified culture. Of course, there were 100,000 perpetrators, you know, 100,000 people who wielded machetes and participated in the killings, and many of those are now returned to the communities. And unlike Germany, they're living with the victims. So the two groups have to live together. So I don't know if, you know, that generation is ever going to be able to put the genocide entirely behind them. But what is hopeful is that you have a new generation that has been born since the genocide, and they have a new vision of what Rwanda could be, and they're starting with a government that is it's honest, it's delivering goods and services, and is pretty effective.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing your recollections with us, Professor David Akerson of the University of Denver Law School, who was part of the prosecution at the Rwanda Tribunal.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you very much. Right. Thanks for having me.